You are listening to WRUU Savannah, Georgia, 107.5 FM and WRUU.org. We are Savannah Soundings, community radio with global soul. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Parenting Room 101. I'm your host, Christy Sanborn, and I am thrilled to be with you today. Today, my guest calling in today from New Jersey is my friend Danny Nodelman. Danny is a devoted wife. She's a mother of three boys. She's the founder of Nodelman Law. She's an attorney with 24 years of experience. She's an Aquarius. She's a Jersey girl. She's BRCA1 Previver. She's also a lover of Broadway and a pillar of strength in her family, her profession, and her community. Welcome to the show. Thank you for being here with us today. And I just want to welcome you here. And I want to just take us back for a moment to when we met, Danny. Do you, first of all, I want to share that our boys were in the same preschool program in New Jersey together. Do you remember the first time I met you or your son Chase met my son Weston?
I think it was Reed. Was it Reed or Chase?
Well, okay, so Chase is he 11?
Chase is 11.
Okay,
yeah.
So Weston is also 11. So I believe I know that there was different times where we crossed paths. I know that they both went to the little gym in New Jersey. They both went to Burnett Hill in New Jersey for a little while. So we definitely bumped into each other a few times, which has been so fun.
Oh, for sure.
Yes.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So I would love to know a little bit more about who you were back then and how different do you think you are from that woman today? Like, what has changed for you since, I guess we'll say 10 years back when I first met you?
Wow, what a question. I think that I've evolved in so many ways. Back, 10 years ago when, I think back to, 10 years when, we talked about us both being Previvers and
yes.
Having the BRCA1 gene. And 10 years ago, I was recovering. I was recovering from, the surgeries, of having the prophylactic bilateral mastectomy and salpingo oophorectomy, actually full hysterectomy. And, 10 years ago, my son was one and just trying to get by, run a law practice, raise my three little boys at the time. And, not being as present, I think, as I am now and in touch with what my needs are. I'm a lot busier now. So with two teenagers and an 11-year-old, but, and a very busy law practice, but, I don't know how to really answer that.
I'm so glad you brought up the BRCA1 because you and I both are BRCA1 positive and it sounds to me like we were on the same timeline because I also had those surgeries done when my son was a year old. It was like, well, it's either do it now or not do it. Yes.
Yeah.
It's interesting that we were kind of similar, in similar places at the time. Will you take
I had no idea when we met each other just a couple of years later.
No. And I personally have not bumped into a lot of women that have had this diagnosis. I have not. So there's only been a few.
Really?
And how about you?
No kidding.
Have you?
One in 40 women in the Ashkenazi Jewish population are BRCA1 positive. And based on my family history, my aunt implored my two sisters and me to, to get tested. And from, learning of this BRCA1 diagnosis and not wanting to have an actual cancer diagnosis, I joined support groups and I met a lot of women in, that were going through the same thing that I was going through at the time. There were some incredible organizations back then, FORCE, Facing Our Risk of Cancer Empowered, where you can meet other people, you can get a lot of doctor's recommendations. I joined that and I met one woman who I'm still very, very close with today. I met her, 10 years ago. And it was a lot longer than 10 years ago. 10 years ago was the surgeries, but before that, I was just being monitored. I found out before I even had children that I was BRCA positive. So, it's been a long road for sure. But, one that I would not change, all these years later.
You said so many things there that I just need to talk about. So you found out you were BRCA1 positive before you had children. That was something that you... How old were you then?
I was 30. Okay, so I was 34 years old. I had just gotten married. I started my career. I got married a little bit later. And I, you know, my aunt, you know, who was diagnosed at age 49, I believe... told my sisters and me, you have to get tested. And, my dad, just to kind of a little story, it's really interesting. My dad had, 5 aunts and 4 uncles. My grandfather was one of 10, and the boys in the family, the men in the family lived into their late 90s and early 100s. The women all died in their late 30s, early 40s. And they think that they all died from these cancers, as they called it back then, these female cancers. And then my aunt got tested, and then I did as well. My 2 sisters are negative, thank God. And I was the only one who's positive. And so, yeah, I was 34, had just gotten married. We wanted to start a family, and, you know, everything was sort of halted at the time. We have to understand what this really means and how to proceed from there. And so, I was 34.
So you decided to have kids and then have that procedure, all those procedures done after the kids were born?
Yeah. So the doc, I met with a leading doctor in, I guess one of the pioneers in the BRCA, in discovering the BRCA gene. And I met with him in the city. And he said to me, based on your family history, if you're thinking of having surgery, you should have it by the time you're 40. Yeah. I was 34. I wanted 3 kids at least. And so, from there, it was all the testing, the first baseline testing, the breast MRIs, the mammograms, the ultrasounds, met with a fertility specialist because I didn't know. I didn't want to pass it along to my kids and did not end up going that route. Was very lucky in getting pregnant, quickly. And that's actually what my husband and I ended up doing is we ended up having kids very close in age because we knew that, I didn't have a lot of time, before I had to get these surgeries done. So, I had my first son at age 34, my second at age 35, and my third at age 38. And so, yeah, they're very close in age, but it's nice. It's nice to have them so close in age. And, by the time Chase, when he was 6 months old, I actually had the complete hysterectomy. Mm-hmm. I did that first because it's a lot more difficult to detect ovarian cancer than it is breast cancer.
Yes.
By the time you detect it, it's generally a lot later stage. And so I just wanted my ovaries out. I wanted everything out. Mm-hmm. And it's funny, it's what one of the doctor that I'd met with initially said, most of my patients who are lawyers, they opt for all the surgeries. They don't opt for surveillance. Just kind of a funny tidbit. But
that is funny, to be so efficient.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I knew what I wanted, and I didn't want a diagnosis. And so I 6 months to the day after Chase was born, I had the hysterectomy. 6 months later, 1 day after his first birthday, I had the mastectomy. Mm. So don't regret those decisions at all. I had some complications with the mastectomy, as but still, even with, 5 or 6 subsequent surgeries, still would do the same thing.
Wow. Did you experience any fear or grief or even maybe a sense of empowerment after all the surgeries by chance?
I think the sense of empowerment comes with knowing that you were diagnosed with this gene, the genetic predisposition, and knowledge is power, right? Mm. You can take what that information and you can act on it. And some go through a surveillance program where they don't really want to go through with, having, surgical intervention. I definitely wanted that. I wanted everything out of my body that I can possibly take out that can cause cancer. And so that's what I did.
Yes.
That's what I did.
Me too. Me too. I felt the same way. That day I got that diagnosis, I already kind of knew my gut feeling, but because my mom had it, my mother passed away, my aunt and my grandmother, all maternal, all passed away from ovarian cancer. And I just knew that I had that gut feeling I had it. So when I found out I had it, I knew what I had to do. That's it. It was, and like you said, it was just powerful that knowledge is powerful to know, okay, now my life is in my hands. I can decide that I want more. I want to live longer.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Absolutely. And yes, of course, there's grief, to go back to your initial question. Mm. There's, oh my goodness, there's fear. There's anxiety. Oh my God, I have a six, I you know, well, at the time I didn't have the kids, but I'm like, can I have kids?
Mm.
You know, what is that going to look like? Am I going to pass it down to my kids? Am I going to have to tell them about it? Are they going to have to get tested? Are they going to have to go through surgical intervention?
Mm.
I mean, I had three boys, but you know what? I got this gene from my dad.
Oh, wow.
It came from my dad's side of the family, not my mom's. And so, you know, three boys, you know, they're not in the clear.
No.
And, you know, they're starting to learn. My teenage boys kind of know what I've been through a little bit. And, you know, my oldest son, who is going into ninth grade, he, you know, he's like, oh, maybe do I need to get tested? And I said, yes, in due time.
Mm.
Not now. You're too young. We're not doing anything right now. But when they're in their mid to late 20s, I think they should get tested, because they need to go under surveillance.
Yes.
You know, at the very least, they need to be, you know, in the care of a doctor who's going to just look at their baselines and make sure that they're okay.
Mm, so true. It's easy to turn your head and not look at it, but it's there. And I, as you're saying this, my daughter is 23 years old. And she wants to have a family. She wants to have kids. She wants to be a young mom. And she's very, very much aware that she will have to take this test at some point to find out. Mm-hmm. And again, just knowing that information is better, in my opinion, than not knowing. At least you can decide.
Definitely.
You have that, right, that freedom of choice. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's exactly what it is. And she can, and even more important, if she's not ready to have kids, at least get into a surveillance program where she can be monitored. And you know, every 3 months, you're going to be looked at, whether it's an MRI, a mammogram, an ultrasound, or just like a doctor, self-exams, whatever you need to do just to make sure that you're on top of it.
Mm. I'm with you too. I wouldn't change a thing about it. It really changed my life, the trajectory of my life, actually. Having all that strength to go through with that, it just gave me superpowers I didn't even know I had access to. So I wouldn't change anything either, Danny. And I have two beautiful kids too that I'm just so grateful to have. I'm just so glad I didn't wait on those things. I didn't wait. No.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know what, Christy, surgery is not for everybody though. So
true. That's true.
You know, everyone has to make their own independent decision. And, you know, I am always willing to talk to anybody and everybody about the BRCA gene, about my experience, about my doctors who I went to. But if someone says, and really, I'm not ready for that, you know, that's absolutely, you know, they're empowered to make that decision.
Mm. And you said
I would support that.
1 out of 40 Jewish women carry this gene?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ashkenazi Jewish women. I mean, that statistic has been in place for a long time. I could even be wrong. It may even be less than that.
Mm.
I'm sorry, more than that. There are so many women and men, but you know, more so women in the Ashkenazi Jewish population that are BRCA positive. And then there's different types. You know, there's BRCA1, BRCA2. Mm. You know, but the BRCA gene does not discriminate. I mean, it doesn't. You know, you don't have to be Jewish to you know, be positive, as you know.
That's right.
So yeah.
Wow.
But yeah, that's why I've done a lot of talks, seminars in local temples and community centers. I just want to spread awareness, and I want to give people that knowledge and empower them to make the decision if they, you know, get a positive result.
Wow. Thank you for all that you're doing in the community by spreading this awareness. It's really, really important, especially in 2026, where we need to know this information. We have to be aware of it.
Definitely. No, absolutely. It's part of what I you know, it's part of, you know, my being. And, you know, I just want to make sure that other women have the support that I had. Mm. And I had so much of it. So much.
You know, I'm so glad you said that. I did too. And I had the best doctors, like just so compassionate, so mm-hmm. open and wonderful, and just made the experience that much better for me. So that's my takeaway there. And just, I'm thankful that we share this together. I think this is just so beautiful. We're both saying like, hey, we did it. We're okay.
And, totally.
Mm-hmm.
We're there for other women going through it, you know.
Oh, yes. You know, yes. So. Bringing more awareness to it is everything. Just talking about it. So
agreed.
I want to switch a little bit to talk to you a little bit more about being a boy mom. So you are the only woman in the house full of boys, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Correct.
So
yeah.
What does that feel like to be outnumbered by all those boys?
Oh my gosh. I mean, sometimes I feel like the queen, and sometimes I want to go hide. I want to, you know, jump on a plane. No, it's amazing. My boys are so different though. Mm. And it's incredible how they're raised in the same household. They're so close in age, yet they are like completely different people with different interests and, you know, just different brains. I mean, it's so incredible. You know, my oldest son wants to be an entrepreneur. I mean, from when he was so little, all he wants, he loves making money. He loves thinking about ways to make money. He started a little business selling stuff in school until he got in trouble by the principal and wasn't allowed to sell anymore. But you know, that's his sort of, you know, that's the where his mind goes. He's definitely going to be a very successful entrepreneur one day. And my middle son is like an athlete, loves sports, plays ice hockey and soccer, and lives and breathes sports. And but he's also a chess player, and you know, so it's so interesting how, you know, he's the one kid though in the family that really got the sports gene, like just loves it, lives and breathes it. And then my youngest, Chase, who you know is passionate about music, and he plays guitar and piano and sings and is really talented. And so it's crazy how they, you know, again, they're all within 3.5 years of one another, yet they are completely different personalities, different interests. Yeah, I love it. I love being a boy mom.
Do you ever get to pick the movie on the weekends? Like a romantic, like a romantic comedy
a romantic
or something.
Comedy? Yes. No,
no, never.
There's no romantic comedies. No, I'm watching. Although, you know, my husband is very good at picking movies. I have to say, and he knows. He's like, "Oh, mom's not going to like this one." But my boys are definitely. I mean, I don't know. My husband lets them watch a lot of movies that probably
he
shouldn't be watching.
I hear that.
Yeah, but you know, as a family, we love. You know, we love. You know, Cobra Kai, and we love Ted Lasso. And my youngest and I have a show that we watch together. And then my oldest and I have a show that we watch together. And so we're trying to start them on like Homeland and 24, which is one of my favorite series. The movie thing, I don't really get a say usually.
I'm glad your husband's speaking for you a little bit there, right? Like, all right, let's just make sure this is okay for mom. Yes.
Definitely.
That's so great.
Yeah, but my favorite thing is live theater. And luckily, I have one kid that loved live theater also. And so Chase, who is my musician, he'll go with me to anything. And so, you know, that's sort of our thing together. We go into New York and we go to Broadway shows, and I have a subscription to Paper Mill Playhouse, and that's what we do, the two of us. It's just, and I love it. I love having that one thing that we do together. It's something that my husband and two older boys aren't in love with, but my younger son is, and so I have my date, and I love it.
I love how you've carved out this individual quality time with each child. That is just so, so special. I feel like that makes such a difference in a child's upbringing when they have that one-on-one time with that one parent. It's really awesome.
Definitely. I try to. It's hard sometimes, though. I mean, I'm not going to say, oh, yes, I carve out time for every kid every day. You know, it's hard. You know, it's But when you can, you do. And I try to, and my husband tries to, you know, take our oldest for sushi just so they can have some alone time. And, you know, we do a lot of obviously schlepping back and forth with Reed to and from hockey tournaments. And, you know, sometimes one of us will go with him alone. And most of the time though, we go as a family, and it's, you know, so there, we do try and do the one-on-one time with the boys.
I love it. You were just in New York City and saw Les Mis a few days ago, right?
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh.
Please share. Yes. Please share. Well, was that your first time seeing it?
No. So this is actually, it's the Les Mis area concert. And so arena concert.
Oh, okay.
And so it's at Radio City Music Hall. I think it's closing next week or within the next couple of weeks. And I just really wanted to see it before it closed. And actually, I went with my best friend. My three boys are away at sleepaway camp for the summer. And so I was dying to see it. I heard so many great things about it. And it was honestly probably one of the best shows that I've ever seen. From just everyone, you know the music, you know Les Mis, and you know the story. But it's not like a Broadway show where they're acting it out. You know, there's a full set and the set changes, and it's like a concert style.
Wow.
And yes, they're in costume, and yes, they're acting. Their voices were so unbelievably powerful. People were crying. People in the middle of songs were standing up and cheering and ovations. It was breathtaking, incredible. Yeah, I loved it. Loved it.
Oh, I'm so glad you got to experience that with your friend, too. Mm. Did she enjoy it?
Yes. She loved it. Yeah. I mean, she sings it all the time.
<That's>
she
awesome.
Sings Les Mis all the time. I'm like, let the professionals sing it.
That's great.
But, I mean, she's my sister. I can tell her that. I mean, I heard her humming during the show. I kind of gave her a little nudge. like, no. I'm here for the professionals. Oh, my gosh. She's
amazing.
The best, though.
What is your favorite Broadway show, if you could think of one?
Oh, goodness. I mean, it really is such a passion of mine. I love musicals. I would say one of my favorites, and there's so many, so many, but memorable shows is what I can say.
Mm.
I thought that that Sunset Boulevard with Nicole Scherzinger last year was amazing. I loved Next to Normal. That was just very powerful show for me. You know, just having gone through a lot, you know, a pregnancy loss at around the same time as I saw that show. So that's always stuck with me. The music is incredible. Of course, Hamilton. Of course, you know, In the Heights. Oh my goodness, there's so many. I love most of them. I don't love all of them, but I just, you know, I usually leave a show saying, "Gosh, that was so amazing."
Did you want to be?
And I'm actually seeing Ragtime next week.
What are you seeing next week?
Ragtime at Lincoln Center.
Oh, wow.
That is, yeah, before that one closes, which is, I think that one's also closing in a couple of weeks.
Mm.
Would I want to be an actress?
Did you want to be up there?
Honestly, okay, so that would be my dream. But if you ask my sisters, I really can't sing. So I've always wanted, I would have, you know, you dream about being, you know, on stage. At least I always did when I was young. But I think I'm better suited, you know, being a lawyer and just going to watch the shows. I would love it. But maybe in my next life, I'll come back as like a Broadway show star.
Do you have any
with
friends
a really good voice
that do it? Do you know anyone personally?
No, not really. No, I don't. I know people in my life that have been on stage in the past, but no one presently in current shows that I know.
Well,
that
I love
would be cool though.
I love that you connect with that there, and you're still walking away with so much just by being there, being a part of it, right? Because it's not just the show; it's the audience too. Like it's a whole unit.
Yeah. I love the whole experience.
Mm-hmm.
And I love giving that to my son. I'm so fortunate. I feel so fortunate that I can, you know, I can kind of, you know, this is going to be something that he will never forget. You know, oh, I used to go into the New York City and see Broadway shows with my mom. And, you know, we keep all the playbills and it's just fun.
Wow.
It's just a great way to spend time and, you know, kind of just, you know, soak in that. I don't know. I just have such a passion for it. I love it.
What do you think most people misunderstand about raising boys?
I think that a lot of people think that boys should be athletes. You know, I get a lot, you know, oh, what sports do, you know, like even talking about Chase, what sports does he play? Mm. I'm like, well, he doesn't really play sports, but he's really good at guitar, or he loves playing, Don't Stop Believing and singing it on the piano. And, you know, I'm like, but sports, you know, he's not really into sports. I think that, you know, that's probably like a big, you know, misconception is that all boys have to be either good at sports or should be playing sports. I think, to be honest with you, I think if he would have, you know, it would be easier socially if he played sports because, you know, Livingston is a big town and he would have met kids from other schools that he would have been on sports teams with. But, you know, and now he's entering middle school and six elementary schools are merging into one. And he doesn't really know a lot of people. He only knows this very small class that he had at Burnett Hill. So, you know, it's going to be interesting for him. But I think that's one, you know, misconception.
I think, and it's interesting, I feel like men also have that issue. Like, my husband doesn't watch any sports. He is an athlete. Yeah. He played, you know, baseball all through his career, but he doesn't actually watch football, baseball, anything. So when he's in some sort of business setting or there's other men around at a party or whatever, they're always asking, like, so did you watch that game last night? It's assumed that he's into that, and he's not. He's like, no, I don't. Right. I don't follow any of the Super Bowl. Like, oh, we do watch the Super Bowl, but other than that, that's not happening at our house either. Just because he's a man doesn't mean he cares about watching sports. He doesn't.
Right.
And it's so funny that you say that.
My kids like going to like live sporting events. But you would never catch other than Reed, my middle son, occasionally. He doesn't even love watching sports, I don't think. But we're not, the person that loves to watch sports in my house is my husband. I mean, he puts on he loves soccer. And that's it. It's funny. He doesn't watch baseball. He doesn't really watch occasionally basketball. But soccer is like his love. I mean, he just can watch it. He plays it 2 to 3 times a week. He's on these adult male leagues.
Wow.
Geezer leagues, I think it used to be called. But my husband watches a lot of sports. Not my kids, which I'm definitely cool with.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So speaking about the summer, what are you hoping that your kids will remember about this specific summer?
Oh, they're all in different, well, I have two in one place right now, but at the beginning of the summer, I had three boys in three different camps. And, you know, I just want them to take away great friendships and just kind of be kids. You know, they're off of social media, which I think is amazing that Sleepaway Camp can provide that, you know, with, you know, banning social media. You know, they don't have their phones. I just want them to enjoy life and be kids and develop friendships the right way and not, you know, everything's texting and Snapchatting and all of that. I'm not looking forward to the, you know, the school year with respect to, you know, electronics and social media. And I think that's the best thing that we can offer our kids over the summer is just run outside, go get on a bike.
Yes.
Go play with your friends, go knock on your neighbor's door and do things the way we did things growing up. We used to just knock on our neighbor's door, you know, is this person available to play? I don't know. I think this modern world is a little detrimental to kids. So for this summer, I want them to just be kids and enjoy their surroundings, nature, where they are.
I like how you said make friendships too. That's so, so important. My son, so here in Savannah, the kids started school already, Danny. They started this week, actually.
Already?
Monday. Yes. It's crazy.
Oh my goodness.
August 3rd. Yeah, I know. It's crazy. So it's so sweet that just a few days ago, he came home and he said, "Mom, I made a new friend." And I was like, "What?"
Aww.
And I just love that in sixth grade, this is still happening, right? It's like, yeah, we never knew each other before. And you know, I don't even know his last name, but he is my new friend. And it was just so sweet. Like, it's just, you're right. That's everything. That's all I want too. I mean, as a mom, just, just those connections. And you can't connect if you're so distracted on video games and social media. It just doesn't allow for that. So I agree with you. Just shut that down. And in New Jersey, are the kids allowed to bring their phones to school? Is that still okay in New Jersey? Do you know?
So it's interesting. I actually got an email this morning, or at least I looked at the email from the high school. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if this is a new policy, because obviously this is my first son who's starting high school. Mm. But they do not want phones in school.
Good.
And they say from bell to bell, mm. if your phones are not in your locker, if they're seen, you're going to get one. Actually, you're not going to get a warning. You're going to, the phone will be confiscated and you will get an in-school detention. For a second offense, same thing, warning, in-school detention. And your parents actually have to go to school to pick your phone up. But the third one, it's an in-school suspension.
Wow.
So they're taking this very seriously. And that's the high school. Middle school, the kids are allowed to have their phones on their person, but they're not allowed to use them.
Okay.
And actually, I think they must block the signal, because phones don't work in school, in the schools, in elementary or in the middle schools. High school is probably different, but now they're, you know, I think they're really cracking down on it, which I don't think is a bad thing.
No, same here in Georgia. Yeah, same rules apply. It's just, and it's great. I think it's great, in my opinion. I think there's really no reason for that. They should just be present, right? Be present, be at school. Make friends.
Yeah.
Yes. Walk down the hallway. I mean, say hello.
If you need to reach your kid, you can call the main office. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's a bad thing. I mean, that's what I've always really done in elementary school. My kids didn't have phones. I'm really not the biggest fan of the phones and social media.
No.
Even though my kids have and they are on.
Mm. Well, let's talk a little bit about turning 50, because you're turning 50, and so am I. We were both born the same year, so we're both turning 50 next year, which I think is so exciting. What are you looking forward to about your next chapter being 50?
Oh, Christy.
Tell me.
Okay, so I will tell you. I have it all planned out.
Really? Tell me, please.
I'm not scared of turning 50. It doesn't upset me. I'm looking forward to it. I honestly feel my age right now. I've had my own law practice for 16 years. Mm. And I've worked really hard in building up this practice. And I think in my 50th summer, so the summer that I turn 50, which is next summer, I'll be 50 in February. Mm. I would like to take, my plan is to take a 2-month sabbatical. Mm. I told my parents that last night at dinner. I'm in Florida visiting them for dinner, for the weekend. And my dad looked at me with this look and like, no, nope, don't say anything, just support. I want to take some time.
Yeah.
I want to be more present with my kids. And granted, they're away for the summer. However, they'll be back in August, so I'll be able to have weeks of just no work stress, and I can be super ever present for them. And I want to clean out my house. There's so many things I want to do. And so I think as a gift to myself, I'm going to take a 2-month sabbatical. Mm. And that's what I'm most excited about in turning 50, that I finally made that decision to do, and I'm putting it out there.
I'm so glad you said
for
it right here.
To hear.
I'm so glad
and
it's
hold
here.
Hold me to it.
Because
hold me to it.
Yeah, now it's real, because you've actually said it so loudly now. And in front of your dad, that was wonderful.
And loud and proud. And my two sisters saying, "You're not doing that. There's no way." Mm. And every summer, I always say, "I'm going to reduce my workload. I'm just going to, you know, take me." But it doesn't happen. And, you know, this summer I've taken a lot of time off, but I do think, even those days that I'm taking off, I'm worrying about what I have to do when I'm actually on, you know, in the office next week. And so it's definitely not as relaxing, even if I'm not technically working, you know, I'm thinking about it. So I'm hoping. Let's see. I don't know. I don't know if my mind will let me take off 2 months. We'll see. Mm.
It sounds incredible. And it sounds like a time that you really want to spend with your kids right now, even more than you normally do already. It sounds like you already have such beautiful relationships built. But just having that to look forward to, I think all women, we need something to look forward to. We really have to have that on the books.
Yeah.
Like working towards it, getting ready for it, you know, just talking about it. That's so good for our soul, really. So I'm so glad you shared that.
I agree. Mm-hmm. What are you doing for your 50th? What are you most excited about for your
50th? That's a great question. You know, I would be so happy with a trip just to somewhere new. That would be really fun. Spending time with my kids, my husband. I really want to have my own limo. I'm hoping by 50 I can buy my limo. I've been saying that for a long time. Everybody that knows me knows that it's really that people laugh, but it really, even my kids are like, seriously, Mom? But I don't know that many people have actually said that, but I've always said that, and I really do want a limousine in my driveway. I want to have a limo of my own that I can drive and get groceries
in. Do you want to drive it, or do you want a driver to drive
it? I want to drive it. No, I'm going to drive it. Yes, Danny. I'm going to take my kids to school.
In a limo.
Yes. So it's not, it's
amazing.
Totally doable. We have a big driveway. Totally. We could do it. And I really hope by 50 I had those keys in my hand, and I hope that limo is in the driveway.
Gosh.
I think it will be.
I want a picture.
Oh, don't worry. It's coming.
I want a picture of you and your limo. What color?
I like white, but I would be okay with black too.
Okay.
Yes.
All right.
So for 50, yes, I want that. I really do. I've been wanting that. So I have a feeling it's coming. I have next year.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Good for you. Wow. You. That's amazing.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to it. So let's talk a little bit more about, what do you think your 50-year-old Danny is going to be like? What do you think? Do you think you're going to see things different? You're going to act a little bit different, maybe take more time off? What are you thinking? Maybe spend more time with your husband, or what does that look like?
Yeah, I'm turning 50 February 4th. Mm. So really that means February 4th to June 30th, I'm going to be working my butt off so I can take that sabbatical in July and August. But I want to say that things won't really change all that much about, you know, me, you know, when I'm 50, you know, I'm in my 50th year now, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you know, you work hard, you play hard, right? You know, you work as hard as you can. And when you're not working, you want to do as much as you can and see as much of the world. And like you, I also would love to travel. And I love traveling and showing my, you know, and taking my kids places. And, you know, but I love having, you know, every summer my husband and I try and take a trip, just the two of us without the kids. Mm. And it's so nice. It's such a nice thing to be able to do and connect. And we do a lot of backroads trips. It's a travel adventure company. Mm. And it's being active. So it's something that my husband loves to do, which is being active on vacations. Mm. Whereas I love, just kind of sitting by the pool sometimes. So I'll do the biking in the morning and I'll go back to the hotel and I'll relax. So I'm hoping that we can do that next summer. But I don't know. I don't think I'm going to change all that much.
No, I don't
think so. Other than taking a little bit more time, maybe. But, you know, I'm very proud of my law practice and what I've built. And so, you know, I'm definitely not ready to, other than my 2 month sabbatical over the summer, you know, I still want to work hard and just be as successful as I can be.
Mm. Such great goals. Have you gotten better at saying no as you've gotten older, would you say?
That's a really good question. I guess it's hard in my professional life. I'm still not very good at saying no, although I have gotten better at it. Mm. I've gotten better at kind of knowing if it's going to be a good fit between the client and me. And saying, if I don't think it's going to be a good fit, I'm not going to take them on. But I will say to them, I have an amazing attorney who I think you would love to work with. And so, you know, and that is a way of saying no without saying no. And there are many times where I'll bring in co-counsel and, you know, I'll say, you know what, I'm going to let you take a lead on this, but I'll stay involved. So I'm getting better at saying no in my professional life. In my personal life with the kids, I have no problem saying no.
Good for you. That's so good to hear.
Yeah. Oh, I'm not going to get pushed around.
That's amazing. Come on. I need you. Hold on. I need you to stop for a second because I hope all the moms heard that. I think that was so worth repeating that you said, I have no problem saying no to the kids. That's so great to hear. That's great.
Yeah.
They need to hear no. They have to be. See, here's the thing. Here's the challenge. I think for a lot of parents, they have a hard time when their kids are having a hard time, right? So if they're saying no, yeah. Now the child's reacting in a certain way, crying, frustrated, whatever. And then maybe now the parent doesn't have the right tools, I guess, to handle that kind of reaction. So that's why they're constantly saying yes to the child and coddling the child possibly because God forbid the child's screaming and crying and having a tantrum and they don't know how to handle that. And I think, let's talk about how did you learn this tool? Were you always really good at this? Saying no and just being okay with the reaction?
I've always said, I actually know a parent that doesn't say no, like never said no, doesn't like the word N-O. And I was never that parent. Now, of course, having three young kids, there are times where I gave in and now having, two teenagers and an 11 and a half year old, like there's still times where I'll give in, but I think no is important. Kids need to learn that first of all, they need to work hard for things in life and things are not going to be handed to them on a silver platter. And, they need to learn the word no. Otherwise, how are they going to, go out into the world and work for somebody and get a job? And if they're used to everyone just catering to them.
Yes, that's so true. We have this thing my son and I do, and he'll say, all right, Mom, now hear me out. And he'll start telling me, like asking me something, for instance, he'll say something like, all right, now don't say anything. Let me ask. And he won't let me interrupt. Mm-hmm. So I don't, it'll be something like, all right, so I want to get on the Fortnite and play for 10 minutes. And then after that, I'll go ahead and, clean up my laundry or pick up my clothes or off the floor or whatever. Mm-hmm. And if I try to interrupt him while he's asking, he's like, no, I'm not finished. Let me finish. And it's so funny. And I do.
I like that.
Me too. So, and in the old days, he used to tap on the table or tap on the couch to let me know that he was finished. And then I could, once I heard him out completely, once it was all out, I was there, then I could go ahead and say yes or no. And he would actually accept it with no problem. And he does now, because if I don't interrupt and listen and I hear it, then it's like, okay, well, no, you're not going to play Fortnite. It's almost time for bed. And we're just not doing that. There's no more video games. And he actually handles that really, really well. And I think that's the tool. I think we just have to give them that space to ask without over-parenting and then they do feel better. Like, all right, well, I said my piece and I respect the no. See, there is a lot of respect there with the no. After being heard.
I think kids want to be heard.
They do. They want to be seen and heard, not rushed along, not over-parented. Mm-hmm. And I've seen nothing but great results from just that little experiment that we put together.
I really like that.
Me too.
Yeah, because there are many times where I do jump to, oh my goodness, it's 10 o'clock at night. No way. Put the video games away. No. Mm-hmm. Well, my friends are, nope, I don't want to hear it. No. Mm-hmm. But it's true. If he negotiates with you, okay, I'll do this for 10 minutes and then I will do that. Mm-hmm. And you can always say, look, last week you said the same thing, but you didn't follow through. So I'm going to say no to that. Mm-hmm. Or, last week, You said you were going to do it after you played Fortnite, so I'm going to say yes. And I think that also empowers kids be able to, mature and make decisions for themselves. And, for sure, I love that.
And I love the negotiation piece that you brought up because I'm a huge fan of this, but within limits. So I'll let him have, I'm going to give you 60 seconds to go ahead and say your piece. But then after that 60 seconds, I'm going to give you my answer. But I'm open to listening. If you want to talk about, he loves this whole shower skip thing. I guess it's a boy thing, Mom, let me have at least one shower skip a week. I don't need to take a shower tonight. I can take one tomorrow morning. And so it's so cute and funny, Danny, but it's important to him. So I'll hear his piece and then I'll give him the answers. But
But I do.
You know,
I'm flexible.
You're on the baseball field with us.
Exactly.
You
really need to get it. Right, right. Exactly. So it's most of the time it's a no, but then I'll flex on certain things. Like, all right, it's Friday night. As long as you take it in the morning, first thing. And then I make him commit to the time then. You know, it's like, all right, you're going to skip it tonight, but what time tomorrow morning will you be in the shower? And then he'll tell me.
Oh.
8:30.
Okay.
Perfect. So then we're going to go with that. So when 8:30 comes around, he's already committed to it. There's not an argument and he goes along with it. So there's communication there. There's flexibility there. There's a little bit of what was your word earlier that you said? I loved it. It was just having the ability to have that conversation with a parent and knowing that their voice is, like you said, it's heard. I'm hearing you. I'm understanding you. But yet I still have the final say. And that's what I'm hearing from you, too. Your no is the final say, and they respect that very much.
Well, I mean, I don't know if they always respect it.
Too bad.
It's true. I mean, there are times where they will respect it, and there are times where there'll be a lot of pushback. And then there are times where I'm just so exhausted, Christy, because we're moms that I just give in. And it really just depends on the situation, depends on the kid.
Yeah.
I don't fear the word no. Mm. And most of the time the boys are okay with that. Mm-hmm.
We're going to take a quick break, Danny. When we come back, I want you to think about this question.
Okay.
When life gets busy and you're giving so much to your family, your career, and other people in your life, how do you recharge your battery and pour back into yourself? I want you to think about that while we're taking a quick break, okay? And when we come back, we'll hear your thoughts on how you personally recharge your battery, other than Broadway.
Okay.
Hang tight.
Okay, sounds good.
Women Heart Savannah, a local heart health support group, meets on the third Thursday of each month from 5:30 to 6:45 p.m. at the Chatham County Health Department Midtown Clinic at 1602 Drayton Street. There's no cost to attend. The goal of Women Heart Savannah is to provide education and information about healthy lifestyle changes to prevent cardiovascular disease in women in Chatham County. The next meeting will be on Thursday, July 16th. Walter San Martin, the Arts Southeast August On View Artist in Residence Artist Talk will be on Wednesday, August 26th at 6:15 p.m. at Arts Southeast. Doors open at 6 p.m. His artistic practice spans sculpture, printmaking, and performance, often exploring themes of immigration and labor. During his residency, San Martin plans to create site-specific sculptures. More information is available at artssoutheast.org/Walter San Martin.
You are listening to your radio station, WRUU, which is presented by people just like you, people from your community. The voices you hear are your neighbors, coworkers, and other people from Savannah and the Coastal Empire. Therefore, WRUU is your community radio station. So won't you please help by donating whatever you can afford to help your neighbors stay on the air. Go to WRUU.org and support your local radio station with a monetary contribution of any amount. Again, support your local radio station at WRUU.org.
Evening Eclectic features weekly conversations with and the music of national and international musicians from a wide range of musical genres. Join me, Dave Lake, your Evening Eclectic host, and these musical guests each week on Sunday nights from 8 until 10 p.m. on WRUU.
Welcome back, everybody, to Parenting Room 101. I hope you're enjoying this conversation as much as I am. So, Danny, go ahead and let us know what you do to recharge. What's your favorite ways to do that?
I love getting massages. I love going for walks. I make it a point every week to go to a gym and just have, it's a small group personal training gym, and I go with some friends and it's social, yet we're exercising. And so I'll do that. I'll play pickleball once a week in the morning during the school year. And, you know, these are all ways for me to do a little bit of something for myself, you know, because I know when I get to my office, it's sort of full steam ahead, focused on that. So, yeah, it's mostly just exercise and massages, which is my favorite thing. I love massages.
That's so great. And it sounds like you're staying ahead of it too, from what you're saying. You're not letting yourself get totally depleted before you actually go to those self-care practices, right?
No, especially when it comes to exercise, because as you know, when you are BRCA1 positive and going through all of these prophylactic surgeries, you go into surgical menopause at a very young age, which breaks down the bones. There's osteoporosis, you know, that we have to be concerned about. And so, from the time you get those surgeries on, you really need to care for your bodies I've really tried hard to do that. It's not easy. It's always a struggle. Getting into the gym and going to, it doesn't have to be a spa. It could just be, a massage therapist, or going out for walks with your friends and just walking and talking. It doesn't always have to be a meal involved, when you want to be social. That's something that I really enjoy doing. And I picked up Mahjong. I love Mahjong, like a 7-year-old Jewish lady.
That's awesome.
Mahjong and pickleball. it's not something that I play very often, but I enjoy it. And, I really do think that you also have to maintain your social relationships. And that's something that I have struggled with, just in terms of having the time to devote to going out with my friends and just maintaining those relationships on a social level. And so, that's why I try and do it other ways. So, when you need to exercise your body, do it with friends. It makes it more fun. I don't enjoy exercise. So doing things socially is, I think it's a really important part of self-care.
That's great advice, too. I love the idea of just walking with a friend instead of having to have a meal together. That's not necessarily the best idea all the time. It's just great to move while you're... Yeah, there's so much to be said for that. I love that advice, for sure. I'm going to take that advice.
Yeah, I love walking and talking. Mm-hmm. You should. You walk and talk.
Yes.
You get 8 a.m., drop the kids off at school, 8 a.m.
Yes.
I'll make my first appointment sometimes at 8:30 or even 9, and for a half an hour or an hour... walk and talk. And even if it's not like an exercise walk, you could grab a cup of coffee on the go and just walk. And so I try and do that, although this summer it's been a little tough, but I do try and do that with different friends, so I'm able to catch up. And I love being social. I love it. I just don't always have the time for it. So that's a good way to kind of kill two birds with one stone.
It's great. Where can people connect with you if they want to work with you? Is there a website you'd like to share, or social media, or anything like that?
Yeah, I don't do a lot of social media. I'm on Facebook, old school Facebook. Mm-hmm. But I do have a website. It's nodelmanlaw.com. And, you can certainly go to my website, send me an email. I always prefer an email over the phone for an initial call, just because, we can schedule mutually convenient time to chat. That's a great way to just connect through my website.
Great.
Thank you.
And what are people normally calling you for? What's the number one reason they're reaching out to you specifically?
Well, I'm a trust and estates attorney. So I draft wills, trusts, living wills, healthcare proxies. I also work with executors and administrators when someone passes to make sure that their estate is administered properly. People mostly call me for wills and trusts. I think COVID really, at least the younger population, it really kind of brought that, to the forefront. Oh God, I need a will. I may not die when I'm 100. I may die when I'm, God, forbid, 30 or 40 or 70. COVID really, I think, had a huge impact. I was always very busy, but I remember that first year I probably got, dozens of calls every week to draft people's wills. That's mostly what I get called about. That's all I do is trust and estates.
Well, it's so good. It's so great that you're helping people with that. It's such an important piece of life to have in place. What made you go that direction? Like, why did you want to do that specific type of work?
Well, I took a trust and estates class in law school and really enjoyed it, but never, even in law school, never really thought about acting as a trust and estates attorney. When I started with my first job, and I was in their litigation department, and I hated litigation, but I loved the firm. I loved the firm. And I went to the managing partner at the time, and I said, I love this firm, and I don't want to leave it. And you have one attorney in this firm that does trust and estates. And they had given me an assignment with this partner before I went away my first year on a vacation. And on that vacation, actually, I'm going to, you know, there's a run off on a tangent here, but during that vacation, I was in an accident, a boating accident. And I broke a ton of ribs, and I was out of work for a little bit. This firm was incredible. They were so supportive. And when I came back, I said to them, listen, I love this firm. I don't want to leave, but I don't want to do litigation. And they did not, they never had associates transition from the litigation department to the corporate transactional department. And they said to me, listen, you have the personality of a litigator. We think you'd be great at it, but why don't you work on this trial for the next 3 months? And after this trial is done, if you still feel that you want to go into a different practice area, we'll support your transition. That's exactly what I did. It's exactly what I did. I worked my butt off, 17-hour days on this trial. And it was a big trial with this law firm. It was a two-week trial. We represented the defendant, and we won.
Oh my gosh.
And it was exhilarating. It was probably one of the best legal experiences of my career, actually. But at the celebratory dinner with co-counsel from Texas and with the client, the celebratory dinner, the partner put me on the spot and said, now do you want to be a litigator? And my response to him was, this solidified my desire to go into a different practice area, because as much of a great experience as this was, I never saw myself examining witnesses and opening and closing before a court, you know, before a jury or a judge. I didn't want to do it. And so the next Monday morning, I was in the corporate transactional department. And for the next 8 years, I worked with one couple of the partners, and I did trust and estates and real estate. And then when I went out on my own, I just focused my entire practice, and this has been 16 years already, just on trust and estates.
So what a great story. I love your drive. It's just so incredible to listen to. And you're just doing such great things in the world. And thank you for how you show up in the world. Thank you for your voice, and for being just a great mom too. Just an incredible mom.
Really, thank you, Christy.
You shared
That's
so much.
Mm-hmm,
I mean it. So really, thanks for your openness too. That's such a beautiful trait that you have. I'm sure you're so easy to work
people.
With.
Mm-hmm. I'm an open book. I'm happy to share my experiences with everybody. And you know, I tell my clients that too. This is what I did in my own will. So this is, you know, doesn't mean it's right. It doesn't mean you have to follow what I did. But this is, you know, these are the ages that I want the money distributed to my kids or who I want as guardians. You know, so it's, you know, I think personal experience is important
to share. Absolutely. Well, it's been wonderful having you. Thank you, Dani. All the best to you. I cannot wait to call you on your birthday, or to send you a text at least,
and
wish you the best. And I'm looking forward
Thanks,
to hearing
Christy.
More from what you're up to and doing. And I hope everybody has a great weekend. I hope you enjoyed this conversation today. It was really, really eye-opening and wonderful. So I hope you have a great weekend.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, great to hear from you, Dani. See you next time, everybody, on Parenting Room 101. Bye-bye.